Hey, welcome in! Latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Breton. Go by SEC Mike, go on them Twitter streets. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, I know you're buried under that Athlon Sports College Football Preview magazine. Can you give us an update on how that's coming?
Mike, this is last year's edition here. It's got some wear and tear, as you can see. It's a 400-carry magazine. We are deep into the process, my friend, with spring practice going on. I was telling you before the show started, I think there are like 9 teams that have not updated their rosters yet. So what are you waiting for? We could finish returning starters, and we're just diving through all of the departures, returners, schedules, and everything. It's that time of the year to start thinking about predictions. So the process is ongoing, my friend. I can't wait to kind of get it to print at this point.
So safe to say you've not been watching a lot of March Madness?
I was watching over the last couple weekends and also like paying attention to the scoreboard. Like when it got down to the end, I flipped the game on. I was going to say, Mike, I know it's a rough weekend, especially after the Tennessee lost, all the SEC teams are out, but also I know you and I are really disappointed today because I saw the playoff committee's got a few new members. They must've lost our application in the mail. So it's been a rough couple days for us.
Hey, Mike Andrews, he's starting early, Stephen. He says, latest episode of Lassen fighting for Arch to be on the cover of his magazine.
I think it's safe to say that he probably will be on the cover of everybody's magazine this year.
Yeah, if you want to move it, you got to put the stars on it. So, safe to say there, a little breaking news. But, all right, so, hey, Stephen came up with another great idea for this episode of the show. We're going to talk impact coordinator hires in the SEC, the top 10, as well as some others we shall hit on this episode. But before we get into that, since the last time we've spoke with you, Stephen, right here, shout out Fred. Go Rebs, Chambliss time. So Trinidad Chambliss, he obviously was already eligible, but the NCAA, those corrupt SOBs, they're trying to fight him. Well, Mississippi Supreme Court says you are denied NCAA, so it clears the path for Trinidad, arguably the best quarterback. Sorry, Stephen, earmuffs, not Arch Manning. It's Trinidad, in my opinion, best quarterback in the SEC. Cleared, no hurdles remain for him to be our starting quarterback in Oxford. Just how big is this for Ole Miss,
Mike? I will say, first of all, I'm currently debating the Chambliss, Arch, other quarterbacks, like first team all SEC. It's one of those debates that kind of goes on every day. I'll be like walking out to get the mayo and I'm thinking like, who am I going to put first team all SEC? So it is ongoing on that front. Wouldn't it have been like an all-time upset if the Mississippi courts ruled against Chambliss here? It would have been like 16 beating one in the NCAA tournament. It rarely happens. No surprise here. I think for the NCAA, they probably should have just stopped a long time ago because it kind of looks pretty bad in this instance when it was such a clear and decisive victory for him in the first court. So I understand they're fighting to uphold the eligibility thing at large, and there are some cases that are really questionable and stretched, but I think in this case they probably should have just stopped once Chambliss got the first one. But in any case, Mike, it's great news for Ole Miss that this is kind of now in the rear view, and Chambliss will be one of the top quarterbacks in college football this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the other end of the spectrum, unfortunate news in Baton Rouge, Stephen, as defensive end Gabe Relaford suffers a torn ACL in practice. Does that, obviously not good news for LSU, but does that affect anything as we're trying to really figure out what LSU will look like year one under Lane Kiffin?
I think it's definitely a setback. I mean, I think given the turnover in personnel, the coaching change, you don't want to lose like any key potential pieces to your defensive front, and kind of waiting to see how this all shakes out with all the transfers. I guess the good news for LSU, Mike, is, you know, they did bring in quite a few guys from the portal, like Jordan Ross, brought in Princewill from Ole Miss. They have some guys up front who can step in from the portal. So no spring portal to bring anybody else in, but it felt like they did a nice job on the front end to sort of fortify that defensive front. also have a lot of trust in Blake Baker too to figure this out. So a setback, but maybe not something that's like a knockout punch for LSU's playoff hopes this year.
Yeah, certainly. Well, and hopefully, you know, won't knock this team too far, but Missouri also suffered a tough camp injury. Steven, offensive lineman Josh Atkins, how big a blow potentially is that for Drinking Company?
Mike, I think this is pretty significant. On one front, it doesn't look like he's going to miss the entire season, so he could be back, probably will be back for the bulk of SEC play, but he is playing, you know, right tackle. So he is kind of protecting the blind side of Austin Simmons being a left-handed quarterback. So that is kind of notable. Obviously, with Caden Green coming back and some of the other experience they have, I think that there's a nice foundation. But for all the good that Austin Simmons and winning the job, and we talked about some of the positive momentum that they've had, I don't think you want to lose your right tackle for too long this season. So certainly something to monitor, especially once we get into the season and see that recovery time for SEC play.
Mm-hmm. And then I really wanted to ask you, I asked Shane about this on the last episode, just curious to get your thoughts, Stephen, but down in Gainesville, well, you know, we are so far away from the season, so this may mean nothing, but they held a scrimmage, their first scrimmage of the spring on Saturday. Quarterback Tramell Jones, I don't know if you even call it starting, but he went out with the first team offense. He did not score on the first drive is what I'm told, but the other quarterback, almost called him a backup, the other quarterback, Aaron Filo, the transfer, he led him to a touchdown on his first drive. So I don't know. What does it mean, Stephen? We need declarations here in late March. Is it time to call the Florida quarterback battle?
Mike, I think what you're telling me is that the Florida defense was elite stopping him at the first drive. I think it goes back to something you and I have talked about, which is you take everything in the spring with a grain of salt because you don't, it's hard to kind of, you know, glean too much information when you have guys who are missing. Maybe there's some things that they set up in the game to kind of scrimmage to see what that looks like in real time after they practice it. So I don't want to read too much into it, but I do think it seems, I kind of thought Filo was just going to come in and probably win the starting job. It does look like it is much closer than maybe I anticipated earlier this offseason. I do think it, watching Filo from his time at Georgia Tech, he looks like a very solid starter to me. So if Jones is pushing him, if he is winning the starting job, I think that's probably a good sign for this Florida offense. And I kind of like with LSU and Blake Baker, I do think very highly of Buster Faulkner. I think he's going to figure this out offensively. So maybe they have two quarterbacks that are capable.
We call that a teaser, folks. So before we get into that, though, hey, down in Austin, they had a scrimmage over the weekend, Steven, and there it sounds like there's a quarterback lighting it up on the practice field.
Uh-oh.
And it's not Arch. He's still limited, so he's not doing the scrimmages. It's freshman Dia Bell. We got a quarterback controversy. I mean, is it possible Arch is not even our best quarterback?
I don't know, Mike. I think that Arch guy's pretty good. This is good for Texas to kind of develop that depth. I mean, obviously they brought in, was it MJ Morris late in the portal? They had Matthew Caldwell last year sort of as a veteran to bridge the gap. I guess it's good to see the young quarterback shining in the spring, especially while Arch is limited, because you get into that season with 9 SEC games, Ohio State, there's still the long college football playoff. If Texas was to make it, so you could potentially have a very good plan B just in case Arch was banged up, or perhaps if those early season hiccups that we saw in 2025 start to show up again.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I just was fascinated to hear your thoughts on another quarterback down in Austin lighting it up. All right, and then last one before we dive into the coordinator talk, Stephen, down in Athens. So apparently Gunnar Stockton's pretty limited this spring. And I don't think it's serious by any means, but I believe it's a knee or a leg issue or something like that. But considering that we are kind of breaking in, you know, new receivers, some new offensive linemen, do you want him out there to develop this rapport with his new receivers? Or, you know, there's people like David Pollack, who we respect a lot. He's saying, man, I don't know if they can win a national championship with Gunner. And I think that is, he's not alone. You know, he's not the first one to say something like that. But is it good that we're getting other quarterbacks developed? I don't know. Is this a plus or a minus that Gunner is limited this spring?
Mike, I think it is a minus, because I do think I want to see Gunner Stockton take that next step this year. I think what David Pollack is saying is kind of the thing that I've been wrestling with for the last couple of weeks, because we have been sort of talking about who are we going to pick number one in the magazine. And no shocker, it's like you go to the Big Ten champ, you go to the SEC champ, you go to Notre Dame. Like those three pillars, somebody out of there is probably going to be your preseason favorite across the board. Georgia, back-to-back SEC champions, probably a pretty strong contender for number one. But the thing I keep coming back to is when I look at this offense, I mean, only four completions of 40-plus yards last year. You lose Zachariah Branch, who is so good at turning those short passes into long gains. So now you're trying to manufacture some other big plays in the passing game. On the positive side, you have all summer and fall to kind of work on that. So it's not necessarily the knockout punch. But I do think it adds a little bit of question to me for Georgia, because I do think they're going to have to generate more big plays this year. I don't think you can count on saying it's very difficult in this era of college football to go 10 plays, 11 plays. You've got to be able to hit some home runs. That's my big question with Georgia, and that's something that I'm wrestling with all offseason, probably much like Kirby Smart yelling at his defensive lineman getting blocked by receivers.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so that's all I had for kind of stuff around the league that I'm kind of hearing about. So let's dive into some coordinator discussions, Stephen. And so again, Stephen's has got 10 top 10 impact coordinator hires in 2026 in the conference. But before we get into the list, there are two guys that I wanted to mention that are not necessarily hires. They're more in the retention category. So Stephen did not include them. You know, we discussed it and thought it'd be best to do it this way. But how big, potentially, do you think Blake Baker being retained at LSU? Because, Stephen, I think, and I understand it, right? Hiring Kiffin, this offense, bringing in Weiss, spending who knows what on Sam Levitt, but probably millions and millions and millions of dollars. You know, there's all this focus on, oh, buddy, man, they're running this tempo. The beat reporters are probably falling out of their chairs talking about how quickly, you know, this looks as, you know, I don't blame them. If you watched LSU last year, it was quite dreadful to see that offense. But while all the focus, all the attention is on all the glitter and the shiny new toy, I think Blake Baker being retained, not a new defensive system, bringing back a lot of key personnel on the defensive side of the football, as well as adding significant talent via the transfer portal. But I think Blake Baker potentially will have more impact than anybody not named Lane Kiffin on LSU's success this year, because I just don't see LSU hitting the ground running on offense with Clemson. Of course, it's the same. Your papa was Clemson, but at Ole Miss, A&M, you know, these are some tough games in the first month. I think it's, let's say LSU goes undefeated in the first month, which is certainly not a given. If they do that, I think it's because their defense is really, really good and leading the way, led by Blake Baker. Would you agree or disagree with anything there?
I agree with you. I do think it's going to take some time for the pieces to come into place on this LSU offense. I mean, look, it's a new system. It's a new quarterback, a quarterback that's banged up right now in the spring in Sam Levitt. You've got, you know, your offensive line, your receiving core. Like, the questions are pretty numerous there. So I do think it is going to take some time for all these new pieces to come together. And I think that kind of leans toward the defense. I mean, Clemson in the season opener, they had their spring game on Saturday and it was kind of quiet. So I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing for Clemson for the news, but LSU's what, a double digit favorite in that game. They'll beat Louisiana Tech. But you look at those next two games with Ole Miss and Texas A&M, that offense is probably still going to be a work in progress until October. So you will absolutely need to lean on that defense to probably win some of those games, certainly against the Ole Miss and that offense with Trinidad Chambliss and Kewon Lacy. But Mike, I also think about kind of the big picture too. Think about when Pete Golding got to Ole Miss and the way the defense got better. And also it kind of coincided with the portal and the NIL and Ole Miss kind of taking that step forward. So, you know, going from eight and five the year before Golding got there to 10, 11 victories those last couple of years, like the defense took a big step forward. And if Kiffin had to go out and hire somebody else, you're kind of starting from scratch there. But the fact they kept Blake Baker, they have that really solid baseline. You're kind of marrying the two. You're kind of marrying the top five SEC defense to go with the top five offense in theory. And I think it will work pretty good for LSU over the long haul. So I just think in the big picture, Kiffin's tenure at Ole Miss really took off once he fixed the defense. And now this year, given the question marks on offense as it comes together, it's going to be paramount for that defense to kind of stay a top five group early in the year.
Mm-hmm. And again, so we're talking LSU defense. And what did I say was all the attention, Stephen, was the offense. There's 10 people asking, well, give us an update on Sam Leavitt. So that's all people care about, but they're focused on the wrong thing. But since they're asking, he is Sam Leavitt not participating in 11-on-11 work. And again, we just opened camp here last week. So it's not like, you know, we're over and done with. He could still suit up. He's participating otherwise, but not in 11-on-11 work. So he is, I think if they had a game today, I don't think he'd be suiting up for him. Do you have any other information there?
So it was a Liz Frank injury, if I'm not mistaken, for him, which is not easy to come back from quickly. So I think the plan has always been for him to be limited in the spring and then ramp it up once you get to the fall, which is kind of the best case scenario. But obviously, given the turnover and transition on the offense and new surroundings, I think you'd want him out there. So I guess to say it feels like it's on track. But it's also it's one of those things when you see Kiffin kind of maybe sort of downplay a little bit at his press conference last week, kind of how fast this is all coming together. It is going to take some time, I think, for Leavitt plus the pieces to kind of get on the same page.
And I'm seeing a lot of comments, Stephen, that LSU's defense trash, that they suck, they're going to suck again. I would challenge, well, basically call out. I don't think these people, these fine cousins, we do appreciate them watching the show, but I don't think they were watching LSU. I mean, I don't know how you, again, I know the offense was dog shit, but even the last month, let's just look at the last month. And again, throwing out bowls are stupid now, but Alabama, which, hey, they were number one seed in the SEC last year, whether it was they're great anymore or not, 20 points. You limit your opponent to 20 points in a conference game, you should win that game. Mm-hmm. All right. Go back and watched Oklahoma. Now, again, they lost, right? 17-13. They made Ja Matir look like he had no business playing at this level.
Yeah.
Again, and this was with a, this is a, this was a, what would their record have been? 7-5 team playing their ass off against a team that had to win to make the playoff. And Ja Matir, let's credit him. He made the play when he had to there. But when you limit someone to 17 points in this conference, you have to win that football game. So again, to say LSU is trash, you're ignorant is the nicest way I could say it. You've just not been watching LSU. And I've said a lot of bad things about Kiffin. I'm not gonna let that stand that the LSU defense was bad last year.
17th in the country in defensive success rate last year for LSU. Also, I think about, you have to kind of take a look at those numbers in context too, because the offense was so bad. They were on the field, they were under a lot of pressure, and yet they were still a top 20 defense by the advanced metrics. So I think that was, obviously, could they get better? Of course, there's areas they could have worked on. But given the turnover, given the transfer scenario that they had last year where they brought in all those guys, to be a top 20 defense, given the offensive kind of ineptitude, is a pretty big deal, I think. So it kind of gives me the optimism of this LSU team and starting over offensively that you still have this really good defense, the kind of the bones of it coming back to LSU this year.
Mm-hmm. And then what other key retention that he's not on the list because he's not technically a hire, but DJ Durkin at Auburn. Now they were really good too. I'm waiting for the comments. Oh, they were dog shit. They couldn't do anything. The defense wasn't. It was the offense, of course, with the passer leading our offense here. But I think DJ Durkin, man, I don't know. I don't know how this, if this fit is going to work. I hope it does. And, you know, he wanted to be the head coach. And I think he was very close to landing it. And I don't know. We have heard some interesting things behind the scenes here. So DJ Durkin could be a home run for Alex Golish. But again, how many times, Stephen, is it where a head coach gets brought in and they're like, you know, you really should keep this guy. How many times does that work? I can't think of too many.
Yeah, it is interesting to when you're hired as a head coach, and especially in the case of Alex Golish, like you want your guys on staff because you don't want to have like any discord or any kind of like style mesh, like not working out. Mike, Auburn was eighth in the country in defensive success rate last year. They were outstanding on defense last year. And the same thing that we talked about with Blake Baker and LSU, they were dealing with a lot and having to be perfect every week because the offense was so bad. I mean, Kentucky won 10-3. If you give up, you know, 10 points in an SEC game, you should probably find a way to win, which I think kind of gets at the hope this season, which is Golish and this offensive staff will be able to put up points. Maybe that style puts a little bit more pressure on DJ Durkin's defense. Maybe it's not as statistically top 20, top 10 defense, and also given the personnel. But given the track record, this defense was pretty good last year. And so I think that has to be the hope of you fix the offense to go with a pretty competent defensive coordinator, and that equals a much better 2026 season.
Yeah, and again, obviously, many, many, many negative things have been said on this program about Hugh Freeze. But one positive, hey, I'll give him a bone here. They recruited extremely well. Now, I don't think that's really him. I think it's the money they had down there. But point being, I know they lost a lot of guys transferring out, but they still got a wealth of talent. And I would not be surprised if they're the most improved team in the conference record-wise, because we all know what a joke and a disaster Hugh Freeze was. So just keep your eye on Auburn this year. I think they could come out of nowhere.
I think Auburn definitely makes a bowl game this year. I think they will definitely be better. The upside of Auburn is kind of the discussion like we had last year, because there was that kind of group of teams, like it was Oklahoma. A lot of preseason love went to LSU incorrectly, but there was a lot of buzz. Hey, maybe Oklahoma could take the next step. There were, you know, like Ole Miss had a lot of turnover, but could they reload too? It feels like one of those teams like Auburn, Florida, Missouri, somebody out of that group is going to surprise this year. I kind of like all three of them in different ways, but I definitely think if I had to do a pre-spring bowl projections, I would definitely put Auburn in there somewhere.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into your top 10 impact coordinator hires for 26. Steven, and before you reveal number 10, can you break down at all your rankings or your logic here and your impact coordinator hires?
Mike, I think I tried to judge the impact that I thought these guys were going to have this year, but also kind of the expectations too. And I kind of weighed into some of the rankings, like trying to go from good to great, or is the floor really low? Can they help them get to a certain point? Also, I kind of knock some of these guys that are coordinators with a head coach that's so dominant on a specific side of the ball, but really just trying to take, there's, I think, 16 coordinator changes in the SEC, and these are the 10 guys I think are going to make the biggest impact in the league this year.
Okay, so number 10, shout out. I saw Cousin Rick in the comments. Reveal number 10 for us, Stephen.
Mike, this is a big one at number 10. It's Holman Wiggins. If you want to look at just impact that he could have on the season, he probably needs to be much higher on this list. Because Texas A&M's got the question marks with the revamped offensive line. What do they get out of Marcel Reed this year? Does he kind of pick up where he left off at the end of the year with the turnover trouble, or does he take a step forward? There's a lot of pressure on Holman Wiggins. So his impact is probably greater than 10, but he is a first-time play caller. His work as a receivers coach has been very good. He's also worked for Nick Saban. He's worked for Mike Elko. I think that counts for something. And I also think it counts for something that A&M has the resources to hire anybody in the country they wanted as OC, and Mike Elko picked him. So there's some risk, but I also think that you kind of have to trust Mike Elko. And given the potential to where this hire could go, he's number 10 on our list.
Any thoughts on the fact that, it's very early, right? But there is speculation and some buzz out of College Station that that A&M will be a little bit more tempo and go quickly, which is interesting. You know, that they returned Marcel Reed, so I guess that makes some sense. You got a field general out there. You've got some really good receivers back, but you're breaking in four new offensive linemen. So it's, you know, maybe that makes all the sense in the world, right? Because if you the faster you go, typically that can kind of help the offensive line. And I don't think you can go a couple of yards of in a cloud of dust or whatever, yeah. But you can't do that with when you're breaking a new offensive line. So
that was Jimbo's offense, right?
Right. Get as far away from that as we possibly can. What would you think about A&M trying to go warp speed this year?
I like that idea for two reasons. I think one, if you are trying to minimize the turnover on the offensive line, and this also, it plays into the second thing, which is, aren't you trying to make it easy for Marcel Reed? You know, you're just kind of minimizing, like, you're getting in tempo, you're making it very easy reads, you're getting the ball out quick, you're getting it in space to your playmaker. So you're trying to say, hey, our offensive line's new, we don't have to block for 5 seconds. You get tempo, you make it easy for Marcel Reed. So I like that if that's the direction that A&M tries to go a little bit more this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, how about number 9 impact coordinator hire, Stephen?
Staying on offense, Mike, and we are going to Arkansas with Tim Kramsey, longtime offensive coordinator from a couple different stops. He has been pretty successful at all of them. Is he as good as Bobby Petrino? Probably not, but not a lot of coordinators are. When Tim Kramsey comes over with Ryan Silverfield, they were both at Memphis. Memphis led the American 2 times in scoring under Tim Kramsey. And even back to his time at Marshall, they were one of the better offenses in Conference USA when Marshall was in Conference USA. There's a lot to like here. Successful offensive coordinator, a couple different stops, kind of cohesion with the head coach. I think this is a really solid hire for Arkansas. You could throw Ron Roberts, the defensive coordinator, on this list too, but I like Tim Kramsey's potential for this Arkansas team this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you hit on something important there where at Memphis, now again you could be somewhat critical of, you know, they didn't win the championship and the resources they had, this, that, and the other. But, man, that was a really competitive league with some really good coaches. And to prove yourself year in and year out, now, obviously, it's tougher in the SEC, but it might... Hell, maybe it's not anymore, Steven. Again, we're losing at everything these days, but, you know, I can't. But point being, I just think it's kind of silly, these people that are like, well, good luck doing it in the SEC, you know, because, I mean, some of the best of all time, like Nick Saban, he had no SEC experience. And I'm not saying this guy's Nick Saban. Well, you know who else didn't? Urban Meyer, you know, and he dominated. You know what I mean? So many of these guys come down here. If you could coach, you could coach, generally speaking. So the fact that he did it year in, year out, I think that speaks well of Arkansas's coaching staff.
I was going to say, that's the same thought I had on Brian Kelly when he was hired. Man, he's won everywhere. He's going to win LSU.
Whoops.
That was way
there
off.
There goes my whole argument. But yeah, right. You're right.
I mean, Mike Elko is from New Jersey. To your point, you know, there's good coaches can come from anywhere. I think if you're a good coach, you can figure it out. Also, you know, on the Silverfield thing, I think it's, you know, he definitely took over the program from Mike Norvell when it was in a pretty good spot. But it actually dipped off. Like, they went, I think, 6-6 one year. But then from 23 to 25, they were 29-9. So if it was all just, I'm taking over from Mike Norvell, I have a good program, you know, Silverfield would have just continued that. And given the roster turnover at the G5, this was not like back in 2010 where you had guys for 4 or 5 years. So I think the fact that, hey, Memphis got worse, he had to get them better, he had to navigate all these roster things, like, I think that says to me that Silverfield was learning on the job as a first-time head coach, and he's got two veteran coordinators to lean on now at Arkansas. So I think for all the skepticism, rightfully so, I think there's some things that you have to like about Ryan Silverfield and what he could potentially do at Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. All right. So who is your number 8 impact coordinator hire in the SEC?
Brad White, defensive coordinator at Florida. I kind of moved him down the list a few spots, Mike, just because John Summerall is a defensive guy. The bottom line is I think John Summerall nailed his coordinator hires, Buster Faulkner and Brad White. This is a big time upgrade for Florida. Heck, they may have one of the better coordinator tandems in the country right now. Just looking at Brad White's resume, he's been around the SEC. He comes over from Kentucky. He and John Summerall worked there. The brain trust, I think, working together at Florida is going to help this defense get a lot better in a hurry. 2020 to 2022, Kentucky ranked in the top 5 in SEC in scoring defense in each of those years. So there is the ability to take talent at Kentucky, develop it, turn it into top 5 defenses. He's going to be working with more talent at Florida now. I think there's a lot to like about Brad White and John Summerall turning this defense around right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and over the years, Brad White, he had a lot of opportunities to leave to probably make more money. They were paying him quite a bit at Kentucky, but he had opportunities all across. He turned down LSU at one point. I remember that quite vividly. He turned down Florida State, I believe. Of course, that program's in shambles now. But point being, you know, people that got money have been after this guy for quite a while, and he was quite loyal to that Kentucky program. So I think you hit on something very important there, Stephen. I want to see what this guy has when they have a little bit more resources behind him. And over the years, now it can't just all be Brad White, but because I know Mark Stoops worked with their defense, but there was a lot of programs that they had a lot of success. And mainly the one that comes to my mind, Stephen, is Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. They always had a ton of success against him for whatever reason. Now, he had no success against Josh Heupel, so I don't know what that's about. But again, hey, Florida doesn't have to play Tennessee this year, so maybe not that big of a deal. But yeah, this is it's going to be fascinating to see Brad White, his SEC experience, bringing it down to Florida with a little bit more talent, or I should say a lot more talent potentially than what he ever had to do at Kentucky. We say it time and time and time again, the players matter more than the coaches. So we already believe this is a good coach. What will he look like with better players? That's, if I'm a Florida fan, I'm pretty excited about it.
It also goes kind of on the same storyline like we talked about with DJ Durkin and Blake Baker, which is at Kentucky, the defense certainly wasn't the problem. But given all the offensive issues, it kind of made any kind of issue on defense magnified because they were either on the field or asked to be perfect. And for a lot of time, they were when Brad White and Mark Stoops were kind of at their peak. The last couple of years, they tailed off. But how much of that was also the offensive regression, too. So this, to me, looks like a really solid, like, SEC lieutenant coming over to lead the defense for a coach stepping up from being over in the American. It feels like a really strong fit for John Summerall, especially given that kind of background that these two have.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of strong fit, Stephen, a strong fit for our audience, none other than CheersHealth.com. Go check them out, CheersHealth.com. There's a link in the show notes. Use that promo code, that SEC, THAT. SEC over at CheersHealth.com to get 20% off. You say, what is this Cheers you're going on and on about? Well, I'll tell you, Stephen, it's the only way Cousin Shane is getting his butt out of bed and on the golf course after all these beers he drinks every night, because it's an after alcohol aid. Whoa, I'm throwing it. They sent us to us. All you got to do, take these before you go to bed or after your last drink, and Cheers Health SEC.com, promo code that SEC. They promise you, you are going to be feeling 50% better or your money back. So go check them out. Cheers helps you your metabolize the alcohol more efficiently and supports overall liver health. You can find this in over 30,000 retail stores, but we're just trying to save you 20% off. Over 50 million doses of Cheers have been sold. Again, cheershealth.com, promo code that SEC for 20% off, Stephen. It's the only way. Again, Shane is getting out of bed after all these beers. So we stand behind Cheers because Cheers is cheering Shane right out of bed. And yes, there he is, Shane down there. Cheers.
I thought maybe he was, you know, he used all of his beers and Cheers because of the struggles that the SEC's had, Mike. I mean, is he, you know.
Well, that is why he is Cheers.
Or we could have said, you know, Florida fans the last couple of years watching that Billy Napier offense, all that alcohol they had to consume to forget it. Now they've got Brad White, John Sumrall, and Buster Faulkner, and Cheers. They're going to be set for this year.
Well, tell me, Stephen, how often they're going to be cheering down in Oxford for Mr. John David Baker.
That's right, Mike. He's number 7 on our list. I hate to keep saying this, Mike, but I think this is another strong fit, especially when he's got experience in the program. He just worked there from 2021 to 2023. So he has experience in your program. He goes to East Carolina, and they are top 5 in the AAC in scoring offense in back-to-back years. Love the big plays that they produced on offense. They led the American in 2024 in plays of 40-plus yards. They were close to the top in 2025. Thought also good balance, too. It wasn't all just big plays in the passing game. It was the run game, good on third downs. I like a lot of what I saw. So now the question is, can he pick up where Charlie Weiss Jr. and Lane Kiffin left off? I think the early returns have to be yes, given his experience in the program and his strong 2 years over at East Carolina.
My only question with him is the tempo. Now, again, that's what Ole Miss has been running for years. So maybe we just don't mess with it. But also, what was the problem last year, Stephen? Our defense kind of fell apart there and may have cost us a potential national championship. Now, again, they made some plays. I don't want to say they were awful by any means, but it's exciting. You're scoring a lot. You're wearing out the defense. So I get all the advantages, but the disadvantages of leaving your defense out there for more snaps, I don't know. I just don't know if there's a middle ground there where Coach Pete Golding is going to have John David Baker kind of reel it in a little bit, or do you just kind of, that goes against our identity. I don't know. What any thoughts on that?
It's a good question. I think this might be one of Pete Golding's kind of first test as head coach, is to kind of see what direction he takes. Because obviously being a defensive minded head coach, do you want to play more to that side of the ball, or do you not want to still want to mess with what's worked? I think you don't want to mess with what has worked. I think, but they were top 5 in the country in success rate back in, was it 2024, when the defense was so good? I mean, to me, it almost, last year is almost more of a, hey, they turned over a lot of personnel. And now, given especially what they brought in through the portal, I think there's a chance this defense is just better just from personnel and production. So maybe there is some tweaks around the margins that you make to sort of play to your defense if you're in one of these close games against a high-profile top 10 opponent. But I think, Mike, I think for the most part, you don't want to mess with what has worked, and especially when you got Chambliss, Kewon Lacy, and these playmakers, I think you play to that strength.
Perhaps. I mean, yeah, I don't know what the right answer is, but I do know the more you ask of that defense, particularly as now we're going to 9 conference games, the playoffs getting longer and longer. I don't know. I just don't know if we'll ever have we had a national champion that runs ultra tempo?
It's a good question. I mean, Ohio State, if you remember Ohio State, go back to 2024, they actually intentionally ran slow tempo all year to be prepared for the playoff. And it kind of showed they didn't run a whole lot of plays. I mean, Indiana last year was 2nd in the country in plays run. They also had 16 games. So, you know, I think I think you raise a good point, because if you are going to have to go through the gauntlet of 12 games, nine of those being in the SEC, you make the conference championship, you're playing in the playoff, that is a lot of wear and tear in the defense. So either your depth has to be better, or you kind of have to make some tweaks around the margin. So I almost wonder if it's kind of almost opponent by opponent case study here. You know, if it's a game where you're like a heavy favorite, maybe it's like the tempo is not as dynamic and you try to maybe get some guys a breather here or there, but you kind of play to your strengths more in those games where it's like a Georgia, it's a heavyweight fight that you know you're going to need to be at your best to win and get to the playoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I mean, take us for what it's worth, but East Carolina 94th in time of possession last year. Now, I literally know nothing about their defense, and I'm not going to pretend like I watched any of their football, but again, just something to consider. But to your point, if we're elite, we go quick, that's our identity. Going away from that, that could be a disaster too, you know? So I don't know. That's going to be the challenge for old Pete Golding.
It really is. I'm so fascinated to see Pete Golding in charge for the full year. I mean, we saw the small sample size in the playoff and he pushed all the right buttons, but it is so, so difficult and also so different to be the head coach from, you know, off season through the end of the year. It's your program. You're putting your stamp on it. I mean, he's passed all the tests so far, and I think he's done a great job of staff building, roster building, but man, when seeing how he's going to have to play this, how much better is the defense? What does the offense look like? You're just getting me excited for these nine games in the SEC and see how this all works out.
I think Dabo would disagree with you that he's doing a good job, but we could discuss that at another time. All right, number six on your list there, Steven.
Mike, this is the guy that John David Baker is following. It is Charlie Weiss Jr., the offensive coordinator at LSU. Just based upon stats, he could probably be higher. But also, Lane Kiffin also plays a role in that offense. So with that in mind, probably move him down a little bit on this list. Undeniable, though, that he did a very good job in the college football playoff last year with Kiffin off to LSU, keeping this offense going, beating Georgia, taking Miami to the doorstep, beating Tulane. His offenses, when he was the offensive coordinator at South Florida, they were pretty bad. Being around Lane Kiffin, though, done a lot of good things. So a coach on the rise, a lot to like here, and the continuity between Kiffin and Charlie Weiss should spell some good things for this LSU offense eventually, once all the pieces come together.
Yeah, and you know, it's questionable to believe all these reports, especially just like tweets from insiders and all this, but you know, there was speculation, again, I have no idea, factual or not, that Charlie Weiss also got consideration from NFL teams. Again, I don't know if that's true, but if it is, I think it speaks to, you know, even at the professional ranks, what they think of the job he's doing. And obviously his father's got a background up there. So well regarded. But yeah, I think it's quite possible he's one of the most underrated coordinators, not only in this conference, but perhaps in the country, and mostly because he is tied to Lane Kiffin. So it's kind of hard for him to garner much respect on his own, but he certainly knocked it out of the park, like you said, in his brief time when Quentin left our team here.
In fairness to him, you know, when he was the offensive coordinator at South Florida, like, they just weren't very good in general. And so it's hard to blame him for everything. But I think we could also see is, you know, he's gotten better as a coordinator. Maybe Kiffin trusts him more with that experience at South Florida, what they did at Ole Miss together. You mentioned the NFL thing. I mean, people seem to think very highly of him, you know, publicly, behind the scenes, and also from the jobs that he's landed. So he feels like if he continues on this track, he will probably be a head coach somewhere very soon. Maybe it's like a Sun Belt school or a Conference USA school. Do you think he should be higher than six on this list, Mike?
No, because I already know who the top five are. But the top five, I think they possibly have a larger impact, believe it or not. Even though Charlie Weiss, we're not ranking him saying he's the top five best. We're saying top impact. And I think you nailed it with your top five here.
This is a tough list to put together. I think I don't know if you agree with me. I think the only coordinator hires I really didn't like were the ones that Kentucky did. I mean, and Chip Lindsey at Missouri, kind of, eh. For the most part, I think everybody else did well. Is that fair to say?
I'm trying to think here. Any I didn't like? Well, there is one on your list in the top five.
Oh, that's right.
We have yet to get to it.
That's right. But I would agree. Like, SEC schools, I think for the most part, did well, right?
Mm-hmm. I hope so, because coaching is a nightmare at the conference right now. But yeah, where they're trying to correct it is in Starkville, where you got their number five coordinator.
That's right, Mike. Zach Arnett, very weird to be the head coach at a program and come back and be the defensive coordinator. But that's exactly what is going on this offseason, and it is such a great hire for Jeff Lebby. I think about the style that Mississippi State plays offensively, high-powered, want to score, you want to get big plays. Well, Arnett's defense is pretty good at sort of creating confusion, sort of negative plays, trying to take the ball away. That style kind of meshes well, I think. You try to create some havoc on defense to go with the big plays on offense. Mississippi State has allowed over 37 points a game in SEC contest the last two seasons. I think Zach Arnett's going to make a big difference right away. This defense may not be top five in the SEC, but man, just given how bad they were, they have a competent defensive coordinator that knows this program and has got a track record of being pretty solid. I think this is probably a pretty five, maybe too low for Zach Arnett. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I do think it speaks to his character and his, I guess just character, but just the fact that he was fired from this university not that long ago in disgrace. And I think Mississippi State fans would have said, I'd be happy if he's never on campus again. And then he comes back again at a role he excelled at this university. I think that says a lot about him and just how much he enjoyed his time there and how much, you know, he believes that he can, you know, that, cause this could be a last opportunity for him as well. Like he's gotta be all in. He's gotta make some strides on this defense, because if they don't, the guy that hired him is probably getting fired. And then where's he at? You know what I mean? So this is just fascinating. And he really, really did a good job as defensive coordinator at Mississippi State. And it would be a nice comeback story, I think.
Third in the SEC in 22 in fewest yards per play allowed. So they had a top five defense that year. Some guys are just good coordinators. Some guys can make the transition from coordinator to head coach. I think he might be one of those guys that's just better suited for the coordinator role. So we joke about it, like, it is weird to be the head coach and then come back, like Brent Pry is doing this at Virginia Tech. He was the head coach last season. Now he's the DC this year. Talk about even a really more bizarre setup. But I think given the way it ended for Arnett and the way that he kind of struggled in his coaching tenure, and given the motivation to sort of kind of like get revenge for that, plus how bad the defense has been, like, there should be a lot of motivation for him to sort of write a second chapter in Starkville. And I think if you're a Mississippi State fan, given that track record, you ought to feel pretty good about where this is going.
Right. And again, what you said there, they had an elite defense at one point at State. This was not a situation like the best example I can think of was when Joe Moorhead got there and they had four NFL first round picks on D. It's not like he just inherited a roster and was like, okay, we're good. They had good players. I don't want to diminish the players they had there, but it's not like they had this loaded with NFL talent, or, you know, again, so he really got the most out of the talent, and they're going to have to do that if they're going to be successful with this current roster as well.
I also think at a place like Mississippi State, where you're going to be at a talent disadvantage to a lot of teams in the conference, this kind of defense where it creates havoc, I know we talked about it, plays well to the style that Lebby wants to play. but it feels like a defense that could be like really confusing week to week to play. And so that extra confusion makes it hard to prepare for, hard to adjust in the game, which helps Mississippi State. So I think it checks a lot of boxes that you want, like just finding ways to get the most out of talent at a place where you're probably going to be behind the rest of the SEC.
Now on the other end of the spectrum, Steven, loaded with talent, just get out of the way and make them better. Who's number four here?
This is Mike's favorite coordinator hire of the offseason. It is Will Muschamp at Texas. I think the simple, easiest way to look at this hire, he is tasked with taking the Texas defense from good to great. Last year, Texas was 52nd in the country in defensive success rate. So they have room to improve. But also, I don't think Pete Kwiatkowski was the biggest issue with this team. So Muschamp, the bar is set very, very high for him. And he is going to be under pressure to get this defense to the elite of college football in a hurry.
Yeah, I mean, and the way I hear it, Steven, they got 20 NFL linemen down there in Austin right now. So, again, no excuse. Apparently, they can't run a practice because Colin Simmons is such a game wrecker. I mean, that's literally what people are saying, and he is, he's special talent. So I can't imagine any coach in the country walking into this much talent than Will Muschamp has, as a new head coach or coordinator than Will Muschamp.
Trying to think of a good parallel, and I guess last year, probably like Matt Patricia, maybe at Ohio State, given all the talent that they had, and honestly, a lot of skepticism about how it worked out. It ended up working out really well. I think of all the guys we haven't talked about on the list, Mike, I think you're absolutely right that he's probably stepping into the most like day one ready for success, right? Set up for a coordinator, right?
I think so. I mean, they rightfully so, given the talent on their roster, they should expect this to be one of the best units in the conference immediately.
I think so, too. I mean, like you said, Colin Simmons is back. You throw in Rasheem Biles, the Pitt transfer linebacker, what they've also been able to do in the portal, development in the secondary. I know they're losing some personnel, but, man, there's still a lot of talent on the roster, a lot coming into the portal. There's no excuse for this defense to be 52nd in the country in success rate. It should be a lot closer to the top 20. And I think, frankly, I mean, if you are in a big picture sense, if you're hiring somebody who's had ties to Georgia and you're trying to chase down Georgia, like that's the level that your defense has to play to for you to win a national title. Is that fair?
Yeah. Well, you know what? They've signed some elite Georgia prospects. So maybe this is another reason Muschamp wanted to get down there. He said, hey, I know that guy. I know that guy. I know that you guys haven't gotten the most out of this player, or that player. I can do it. I know them. I know their strengths. So, you know, maybe that's part of it as well.
Do you think Muschamp, if you stay there for 2 or 3 years, do you think he's a better defensive coordinator than Kwiatkowski was?
No.
I do. I think there's a chance that he's better. Okay. I don't think Kwiatkowski was necessarily a problem, but I think there's another level this defense could get to, and I think Muschamp could get him there.
That's fair, but I just have seen – I've just not seen evidence that Muschamp – again, I don't know where he gets this reputation. I think it's because he yells and screams, and he's hit a damn blackboard or clipboard or, you know, whatever, that dry erase board. He smashed it. Oh, my God, look at this guy. But, you know, beyond that, I don't – what's he done? I mean – I'm not giving him credit for the roster that Kirby built when they were dominant. Are you?
No, not at all. I was going to say, what's he's like finally fulfilling that head coach in waiting contract for Texas that's been down there. They finally had to bring him back after all these years and say, no, Will, legally, you have to come back. And so let's find a spot for him. It is a little kind of weird that he's been kind of either in an off the field role, you know, not necessarily been the defensive coordinator somewhere. And now like that was the guy Sark wanted. The only thing I can think of, and I think it is going back to what he said about Kwiatkowski, is like Will Muschamp is basically the head coach of the defense now. It's his side of the ball. He trusts him to run it. He's had track record of some success. And also I think he's got the kind of elite ability to maybe try to get the most out of this talent. So this is kind of a play on the margins. Like Texas has been pretty good on defense. You're trying to get it to elite. If you can do that offensively this year, Arch Manning taking that next step, combined with a better defense, then you're set. Like that's your path to contending for the national championship this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the gamble. It's going to pay off, or it's going to blow up in their face. I think you already know where I'm leaning. But all right, let's move on from that. Number three, Stephen, impact coordinator.
Mike, I think this guy is three, but I think you could make a case he could be number one, and that is Kendall Briles, the offensive coordinator at South Carolina. I think maybe one of the most important hires of the offseason for any program in college football, just because of where South Carolina was last year. So disappointing. They've cycled through offensive coordinators that have frankly been not great hires and pretty disappointing on the field. They need to get the most out of Lenora Sellers. And I think the thing that I like the most about Kendall Briles every year, whether it's been at TCU before or other stops, it is a very quarterback friendly, very college-like offense, which means I think they can hit the ground running right away. They can take some of the pressure off of Sellers and get him playing up to his potential and kind of rebuild that confidence that maybe kind of got a little bit hit last year because of all the offensive issues they were having. So I think he's poised to make an immediate impact. I think the upside of this hire, if he can get it to, you know, elite level production, then South Carolina probably rebounds back into the top 25, top 20 this season.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think, I mean, depending on what you think of Dow Loggins, I don't know that Beamer's had a good offensive coordinator to date in yeah. Columbia, yet they've had their successes. It's been very mixed, obviously, but I think it goes without saying this is the best offensive coordinator of the Shane Beamer era. They've got a lot of talent to work with. And this guy, at many, many stops, including in this conference, has made an immediate impact and has excelled. I think you got this just right. Top three, for sure. Top three impact coordinator hire in the conference this year.
Easily, in my opinion, the best coordinator hire, offensive coordinator hire that Shane Beamer has made. But it's also funny, it's like the most important one, given like where this program is and the potential to kind of be staring at like a crossroads type of season. And when he was at Arkansas, Mike, 2022, averaged over 30 points a game. Every year at TCU, averaged over 30 points a game. If that's the production South Carolina is getting, I mean, like I said, they're going to be in the top 25 because that means Lenora Sellers is back to producing at 2024 into season type levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't. I think with Shula, it was just too bogged down, you know?
Yeah.
And it certainly seemed like Sellers thrived in those moments where he was not overwhelmed with pre-snap BS, you know?
Yeah, this kind of the Briles hire feels very like college, whereas the other guys felt very pro style, very structured. I mean, I know it's nice to sell that to quarterbacks like a Spencer Rattler, like a Lenore Sellers for NFL purposes. But I mean, look at all the offenses that have, you know, put quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, you know, Indiana's certainly pro style. They run a lot of RPOs. Every offensive scheme is kind of meshed together and they all kind of blend together. But this I think can make it easier and sort of let Lenore Sellers not have to be doing 100 things. Like, you're making it easy to play fast, to play loose, to build that confidence back up, use your legs, be able to hit the easy passes, let the Jaden Sellers and the other receivers take it in space. So this really feels like it is a good fit for Sellers and his talent.
Okay, we're in the top two. Stephen, who do you got as the number two impact coordinator hire at ASCC?
Mike, this is like going from like black and white TVs to like, you know, big time like satellite in the 90s. It's Buster Faulkner of Florida. Put out the Billy Napier archaic caveman offense and bring in some spread with Buster Faulkner. I love the creativity. I mean, Georgia Tech was one of my favorite teams to watch last year just because of the creativity that Buster Faulkner had. He has been an offensive coordinator at a handful of jobs, But last year at Georgia Tech, they led the ACC in yards per play. Great use of the run game, quarterback development. We all remember how Haynes King struggled at Texas A&M. He was an all-ACC type of quarterback over at Georgia Tech. So this just feels like somebody who is going to get the most out of Florida's very, very talented skill positions this year.
Is it legal to run offense in Florida? I mean,
what was that? The fun and gun? What was that all about?
Yeah, this used to be the place for offense in the Southeastern Conference. And, you know, I guess we got a little bit of that under Dan Mullen, but it's been a while since they've had a fun and interesting offense. But I think this could be it. Let me ask you this, because I'm not trying to knock this impact ranking, because I think you could say it's maybe the best, one of the best potential hires. If we were ranking these coordinators as like the best long-term hire, I feel fairly confident to put Faulkner maybe even number one, but it may take, I don't know if we can come in year one and expect this to be an elite offense, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's just because I don't know who the quarterback's going to be. You see what I'm saying? Like, maybe any way you break it down, I think this is a good hire. But I think he'll be better in the long run than he is instant impact. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. He was pretty successful from the jump at Georgia Tech, which makes me think that they can kind of hit the ground running here. I mean, also thinking about Florida's offense last year and how frustrating it was. I know there's some quarterback questions. I mean, DJ Lagway didn't have the best year last year either. So even if you're just getting like average play, I think there's a lot of like meat on the bone for this offense to improve. I think I would agree with your kind of point there, though, is that once Florida and this staff and under Summerall have a chance to recruit and they go out and maybe get a high level impact starter, then the offense can go from like here to here. So, yeah, I think long term, I think there's a lot to like. Short term, I think you'll see a much more creative and I think a much more productive offense next year. I think the question is like, what's the ceiling, I think?
Yeah. And now certainly they'll have weapons. Maybe the best running back in the conference. Arguably, maybe the best core of receivers. So who knows? I mean, if they hit on the quarterback, that's the missing piece. I'm probably focusing too much on that. But if they're quarterback is, let's just say, very good, which is not a given, but let's say he is. Yeah, Florida is going to be very dangerous this year.
I think Florida is probably my favorite of the dark horse teams that we talked about this year, just because it feels like the coaching upgrade's pretty massive from a guy who's getting the most out of the roster at G5 schools, or sorry, now G6 schools, going to Florida and also inheriting some skill talent. I think that's going to work out really well for Summerall and Faulkner. So I'm probably a little bit higher on Florida as far as the dark horse over Auburn from our discussion earlier. But I think long term, and I know it's, we talked about this with Billy Napier, like here comes a coach from the G6 ranks taking over. Like it seems like a good fit. It feels a little bit different. Doesn't feel like Florida's going to run back the same struggles that we saw the last couple of years.
Okay, now we're down to the number one, according to Steven, impact coordinator hire in the Southeastern Conference. Cousin Shane, I hope you're still in here, buddy.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mike, I hope Cousin Shane is still awake, because number one is Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator at Tennessee. I know Jim Knowles and Penn State didn't have a great year last year. I don't think one bad season erases 10 plus years of being a good coordinator, and he's done it at some hard stops. Yes, he was Ohio State. They were an elite defense, but back to Oklahoma State, not a place that was easy to play defense at when he was there, and he was very good there. So is it going to take some time? Probably. But I also think what Tennessee has been able to do with the assistant hires and also through the portal, they have guys who are very familiar with Knowles' scheme from Penn State. So I think that should kind of fast forward on the rebuilding process there and also just kind of getting acclimated. Also, Tennessee was pretty bad last year on offense, had our defense. A lot of injuries, played pretty bad on defense. I mean, the bar is pretty low. getting someone of Knowles's caliber, and I think if you forget about last year, most people had him probably in the top five defensive coordinators in college football. I don't think he's forgotten all that. And given where Tennessee is, I think they're in for a massive, massive improvement on that side of the ball.
Now, let's say that happens. Let's say they improve drastically, which they got a lot of talent. Linebackers, are, I mean, they're loaded with linebackers. Rodney Gardner, I think he's the best defensive line coach in the SEC. They have a lot of resources invested there. You know, secondary, they've hit the transfer portal, so we'll see about that. But let's just say the defense is significantly better. Is Tennessee being overlooked as a potential playoff team, you think?
I think making the playoff would be a pretty, I wouldn't say like, wouldn't necessarily surprise me, because we have surprise teams every year that have made the 12-team playoff. And also, I think you'd be thinking that if Knowles delivers on defense, you're trusting Josh Heupel to figure this out offensively, which I think they will. I think in time, Tennessee is going to find the right quarterback. We've seen Heupel build his teams to the strength, whether it's the run game, whether it's the defense, whether it's the quarterback and high-profile or high-powered offense. I mean, Tennessee's won a lot of different ways under Josh Heupel. So could they make a dark horse run at the playoff? 100%. What I think is more likely is maybe they're a little bit underrated on the sense of like looking at early over-unders. Where is Tennessee? If they take that big step forward on defense, I'm also going to pencil in Heupel to get enough out of the offense to say they're probably a little bit underrated in those early over-unders or maybe spring top 25s. They should probably be certainly in there if that scenario plays out.
Right. And I've been thinking about this, Stephen, and it applies to Tennessee certainly, but it applies to several others, right? Where I'm trying to think of certainly Georgia, of course, Tennessee. I think you throw Texas into that conversation. I think A&M and Oklahoma are on the verge of this, but and Missouri is another one where we've kind of had these conversations, but where maybe, again, and there's nothing wrong, right, but with getting fired up about new coaches, new coordinators, things of that nature, but there's something to be said for stability, and not only stability, but there's a difference. No offense to Shane Beamer's continuity and Heupel's or Drink's. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about just, you know what you're getting from these guys. You know you're getting a competitive football team that when they hit the field, like I think I really underrated Ole Miss in this category last year, where from day one, you just look at them and say, by God, that looks like a dangerous team, you know, and I had them as like an 8-4 type team. Of course, they, you know, won 13 games. They were awesome. But in this era where everything's turning over all the time, maybe we should give benefit of the doubt a little bit to some of these guys that have been in this conference, that have been successful and proven that they know what they're doing. Basically, when it comes down to, you know, right now, Florida has the same over-under win total as Tennessee, right? So it's like, Now, I've been hyping up Florida, but should Florida be given the benefit of the doubt, given all the newness to Josh Heupel's Tennessee? The argument I'm making right now is I don't think they should.
I think maybe the argument for Tennessee and also for Texas A&M and Oklahoma, like you mentioned, is there's one side of the ball too that you probably feel good about, or at least you know what to expect kind of like from those coaches, because we know that, I mean, certainly there have been times where obviously Heupel's offense here and there, whatever the stats were, but you know that eventually he's going to put together a good group. And you know that, like we talked about with sort of being, you know, adapting, whether it's being good at your run game, being good on defense, like, there's no transition period. where like at LSU with all the new faces, I mean, it is really hard to bring in that many players plus coaching changes, plus schemes, make it all work and hit the ground running in year one. Tennessee has its own challenges, but also I think you could say, okay, the defense may have bottomed out last year, and given Knowles' track record, if we can just even get to, you know, 30-40% better to go with an offense that's going to get better during the season, you're set. Like you're back in the top 25, you're back being the dark horse to the playoffs. So there is a trust factor for me on the Heupel side of things, because I know what I'm going to get offensively and that they are going to score points. If they can be better on defense, then they're going to blow every preseason expectation probably way out of the water.
That's all I wanted to hear you say, Steven. So I'm sending that clip to Cousin Shane to get him fired up. Steven up. We appreciate you, buddy. We appreciate all Stevens on this channel. I'll tell you what. But shout out the legend, Steven up.
We showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa.
It's we get the sound for Steven up today.
Roll Tide.
Yeah. Appreciate you. Shout out to Lassen for putting the list together. Thank you, Steven up. All right.
Shout out Steven up. Hey, Mike, by the way, Alabama too, we should also note I know Jamarcus Shepherd had the co-offensive coordinator title. He's now the head coach at Oregon State. Nick Sheridan, Michigan State's offensive coordinator. So there is some turnover at coordinator, but no change at play caller. So, we talk about continuity. Alabama with the question marks they have this season, it's good that Kalen DeBoer has those kind of continuity at the coordinator ranks. And by the way, I mean, Alabama, really interesting team this spring. You know, we talked Cromwell, the freshman running back's been banged up. The two quarterbacks, it sounds like, in some of the behind-the-scenes stuff have looked good, close quarterback competition. So very, very interested to continue to get some intel out of Alabama this spring.
Let me ask you this about Alabama, though. Any thoughts on the fact that they – now, depends on who you believe. They have given DeBoer a contract extension, but they're like, they don't want to announce it because they're afraid of backlash. I mean, what does that say about their confidence in the program?
You know, it's funny you say that, because if you look at Kalen DeBoer's resume, and he's what, 20-8. And he's played for an SEC championship. He's been to the playoff once, nearly went to the playoff in 2024. There's like 100-something teams in college football that would take that. So I understand the angst, you know, that Alabama hasn't won a national title. I also think it is just Alabama is like every other team in college football. I mean, Georgia has not won a national title in a couple of years. The sky's not falling. Ohio State was, it was supposed to be a good team and they fell apart in the playoff last year. I mean, everybody's going through this. The Nick Saban discount that I think Alabama was probably getting on the recruiting trail, like, it's going to take some time, I think, for the NIL to catch up. It's also really hard to keep a lot of good players in your program. I mean, Ohio State's fighting this, Georgia, Texas, they're all fighting it. Indiana just won the national championship. I mean, Texas Tech was one of the best teams. Like, the sport has changed so rapidly. And it's also why I look and go, man, DeBoer's been pretty good. Like, yeah, they got a lot of questions and they got to be more physical. They got to run the ball, you know, this, but it's like, man, given all the chaos of college football, that's a pretty good place to be, right? How many teams would take, like, a lot of teams would take that. Am I crazy?
Oh, I didn't know you were DeBoering's agent, but I'm glad to put that out there officially on the record, because I think we need to get rid of his DeBoering ass. But hey, any closing thoughts before we wrap this one up, Steven?
Mike, I think the biggest thing that I'm looking forward to over the next couple of weeks is just any kind of spring intel. I think it's been hard to get more kind of behind the scenes, like what's going on in spring practice. So many of these practices are closed. You're not getting a lot of intel. I take everything with a grain of salt, but man, this time of year, I'm like, you know, all about just trying to read into every tidbit. So, you know, like just reading about the Alabama quarterbacks, the Florida quarterbacks. So, man, just looking for any kind of intel. I can't wait to see what happens in spring practice over the next couple of weeks.
Well, I just want to say thanks, as always, Stephen, for stopping by and dropping all this knowledge on us like you always do. Before you go, will you remind the cousins how to follow you and how to find your work?
Absolutely. You can read all my work over at AthlonSports.com. Follow me on Twitter at AthlonSteven, Stephen L. CFB over on Facebook and Instagram.
All right, Stephen, thanks again. We appreciate each and every one of you for hanging out. We'll be back tomorrow with Cousin Shane and maybe Marler. I don't know. He's still fired. So until further notice, we'll see you tomorrow night.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.